not sure if Craig's going to that or not. Have you met Craig Stowers before? He's our deer shop.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to talk also about deer tags today a little bit to us. He would know. Hey, Craig.
Yeah, well, he did stand in the big yellow version.
Commission, Mr. Bob Trainer. Next to him is Commissioner Bob Hathoy from Los Angeles. Next to him is Bill Cunningham, our legal counsel. And on the far left is Adriana Landrum, our special assistant to the director. On my right is Commissioner Michael Flores from Sacramento. And to his right is, let me get Zonkey's right title here. Where are we at?
Give him a promotion. Give him a promotion, right.
Deputy Director of Wildlife and Inland Fisheries, Zonkey Master. So we welcome you this morning, and with that, the director will tee up the first item on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. President. Our first item this morning is announcement of results from the Commission's executive session held yesterday afternoon. The Commission's legal counsel, Mr. William Cunningham, will make that report.
Bill, before you start, I did leave off one. I want to introduce Warden Dave Smith in the back of the room as well.
Great.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the Commission, Bill Cunningham, Deputy Attorney General, and your counsel. Yesterday afternoon, the Commission did meet in an executive session to discuss matters in litigation and also matters regarding licenses and permits. As to matters in litigation, the Commission did agree to extend a tolling agreement extended to the Save Our Shasta and Scott River Group. This tolling agreement was entered into originally in August of 2002, and the Commission has agreed to extend it for at least an additional, I believe it was 6 months, pending some final resolutions with that group. As to licensing matters, the following licensing matters were heard. In the matter of John Borman for a market squid vessel permit renewal, the Commission decided not to reissue that permit. Mr. Joseph Campo Piano requested a nearshore fishery permit for the South Central Coast. That was granted. Mr. George Castagnolo requested a deeper nearshore fisheries permit. Actually, I'm sorry, Mr. Campo Piano was also a deeper nearshore. Mr. Castagnolo requested a deeper nearshore fishery permit. It was granted. Mr. Miao Van Nguyen requested a South Central Coast nearshore fishery permit. It was denied. Mr. Ben Terra requested a South Central Coast shallow nearshore fisheries permit. It was granted. And Mr. Richard Zellers requested a deeper nearshore fisheries permit. It was denied. Mr. Tom Hafer requested a lobster operator's permit. It was denied. Mr. Jason May was seeking an application for a guide license. The Commission determined to sustain the Department's denial of that guide license. And Mr. Harvey Gonzalez had his lobster operator permit revoked. Also would like to inform the Commission that there was one additional item that was ready for resolution and that we did not resolve. This had to do with a fallow deer permit for a family named Jones, and I would like to commend the department and its director. This matter was scheduled to be heard by the Commission, and the matter was in the alternative resolved between the department and all parties involved. I was at least a party to that discussion, but the burden of going forward and the burden of resolving it was accomplished solely by the department, and I would like to commend the department for its efforts in the matter. That's all I have, Mr. President.
Our next item is a discussion of the proposed changes in the 2004-2007 mammal hunting and trapping regulations. Outside the meeting room on the table, there's a handout called Numerical Listing of Mammal Hunting and Trapping Regulations. It includes all of the proposed changes that the department provided to the commission at the commission's February 6th meeting in Long Beach. You'll hear from the department in a few minutes. There's some additional changes that the department's proposing based on receipt of public recommendations at that meeting and for the last 2 years. This meeting is to receive public comments on all the proposed changes that have been made to the Commission. The Public can also provide comments on any public proposal that's been made with a recommendation that the commission accept or reject that proposal. The commission will also receive public comments on these proposed changes at its April 2nd meeting in Sacramento. With that, I'll turn it over to John Carlson, who's the chief of the department's wildlife programs branch.
Thank you, Mr. Trainer. As of, you know, at our last meeting, I went over a summary of the proposed changes for this session or this regulatory year on mammal and hunting regulations. And there's been a few changes since then that I will summarize for you. And we have turned in a copy of department responses to public recommendations and comments that were received since February 28th, 2002, and up until February 20th, 2004. And then any we receive after February 20th, we will continue to respond to those and bring those at the next meeting. As far as changes since our last meeting to the proposed regulatory package, we have amended a new proposal to amend section 311 at the request of the commission and at the request of the public. And this adds, provides for the use of box traps to take rabbits in Orange County. So that is been added to that, proposals. And then in the section for elk, section 364, we are adding language that will establish an earlier season for the Owens Valley Tule Elk fundraising hunt. So this hunt will begin on the last Saturday in July and continue for 30 consecutive days. And that was a recommendation by the public, and the department agrees with that recommendation and is forwarding that for your consideration. This earlier season will improve hunter satisfaction by allowing bulls to be taken when the condition of their antlers is optimal. And section 708, there is a package in front of you that is mainly bringing it up to date on the, in that section it has dates for the hunting license year and the hunting tag applications, and we have to update that every year to bring the years into a line. So those are changed to 2004, 2005, and then there is some adjustments on this year. The pig tags will be sold individually instead of a package of five, and that's in line with some new legislation. And then there is some changes on the addresses to send application packages, some editorial changes in that regard. So that's the changes that for Section 708 that are new from since last meeting. Mr. Trainer, did you want me to mention the continuation notice request on trapping, or did you mention that?
I didn't mention that. I was going to leave that up to the department.
Okay. On our first, let me talk about our deer tag allocation, and there's one change to that, and I'm going to let Mr. Craig Stowers, our senior biologist for our statewide deer program, give some information on that.
I'll keep my talk short and sweet. We only had one change from the first go-around on our proposed regulations, and that was a veto of an antlerless hunt from Butte County. So J16 is no longer going to include Butte County in their junior hunt. And that's the only change we had. I've been told that there's been some discussion regarding proposing late season archery hunts in several of our zone complexes. And I just wanted to say that we are actively considering that and trying to do the necessary groundwork to pave the way to get that done where it's feasible. And I and some of my colleagues have gone through the last 3 years worth of data and have identified some zones where we think there is a potential to have additional hunts based on the herd performance data. That's the first step. The next step is to try to get some specific details about when and where and how many tags we want to try to authorize. So the process is ongoing. I just wanted to update you on that. Do you have any questions?
What sort of zones are you looking at?
We're looking at the A zone. We're looking at C3 and C4, the D3 through 5 complex, D6, D7, D8, D13, D17. Okay. We established some real rough criteria, some basic foundational elements that have to be met before we can even consider that. And one of them is that the herds in question have to be at or above their buck ratio objectives. I mean, that's a measurement we use to establish our success. And then another criteria was that the harvest buffer that we calculate within our environmental document has to be large enough to account for any increased bucks we may kill due to these new hunts. So this is the first step that's done. The next step will be to collect the necessary data and start laying the groundwork in the regions to get this done.
You're going to come back to us in April with numbers?
I can come back with you in April with more data to indicate.
Not in particular to this. I'm going to change.
Tag quota recommendations?
Yeah,
you bet. Okay. You bet.
Let me ask you a question right now. I know because of budget constraints we've had to cancel some of the roundups. Is that going to affect your ability to give us some good numbers in terms of how the deer herds look?
No, the survey work is a critical element of my program, and that has not been modified.
Good. Very good.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Craig. The last thing that I'd like to mention is that the department has forwarded a request to the commission to withdraw the trapping regulation package at this time and ask for a continuation notice. And this would affect sections 465, 465.5, 467, 475, 478, and possible proposals to add a number of new sections. These are two amendments and additions that are submitted to allow compliance with Senate Bill 1645 that was passed in 2002. During our last year and a half, the department, in an effort to incorporate suggestions from interested parties, has held several public meetings, and it has become extremely obvious that the interested parties that have come to the table come from all walks or all different sections of California citizenry and very diverse opinions and backgrounds coming forward with concerns on these possible regulation changes. We have found ourselves in a number of technical legal questions and issues that need more research and more legal work, and we are asking for a continuation with the plan to bring a new initial statement of reasons before the commission in June of 2004.
We don't need to take action.
No.
Are there any questions on the updates?
Any questions from the commissioners? Okay. We'll wait for public testimony, John.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. We'll go to our public testimony now. Just remind the audience that the commission's policy is to receive public testimony in 5 minutes or less. And if you represent an organization or a group of individuals attending today, you can select a spokesperson to make your comments, and the commission would allow additional time for that individual. Also, we have several individuals that have come here to provide comments on the trapping regulations, and if you'd still like to do that, we'll provide that opportunity, or you can talk to Mr. Carlson outside and provide the department with your concerns that they can consider in including in the new proposals that they'll be bringing to the commission probably in June. Our first speaker will be Stephen Abbott, followed by Joe Becker.
Good morning, members. First, I'd like to take this opportunity. I'm the Region 1 Legislative Rep for California Bowman Hunter State Archery Association. And we would like to take this opportunity to express our thanks and appreciation to Mr. Flores for his work and to welcome the new president. Thank you for coming today to hear us. And for the Cascade and Redwood Empire Archery Associations, they convey their congratulations also, Mr. Flores, on your selection for your award from our association at our state meeting. To be brief, I viewed the videotape from Long Beach and the issues that were spoken of and Dr. McGinnis's presentation. I'm presuming you all have the package. What we're here today to do is to restate our support for those proposals as they're stated, and with additional comment in the area of the B zones for the proposed late season hunts. They were given a generic answer by Mr. Carlson of biology doesn't support it, and all I'm asking for or requesting, if possible, is some written information to support that, basically for discussion purposes with people I represent. If that's available to me, I'd be appreciative to get a copy of that. Other than that, the proposed changes that DFG has we're in support of. And we reviewed the crossbow issue also, and we support that issue as stated in the regulation changes. In regard to the late season hunts with a possible conflict to the bear hunters in that area because of the dog issue, we'd like to express that we're not asking for any conflict of those issues, as it can be plainly established whether or not a person's bear hunting or bow hunting for deer. So we feel that that point is not one of contention between us and the bear hunters, and it wasn't our effort to do that. Other than that, I'd like to thank you for your time this morning, and again, we'll be getting copies of this tape as well before we meet with you in April, and thank you for your time.
And Mr. Carlson will be happy to furnish you the information you requested if you want to hang around and get with him a little bit.
Yeah, thank you, because a large part of our people do hunt in the B zones, and they've been doing it for several years. And, of course, you know, you need answers to questions. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Joe Becker, followed by Stephen Bostain.
Good morning. I'm Joe Becker, also a legislative rep for Region 2, Fish and Game Region 2 of for CBH, California Bowman Hunter State Archery Association. Again, I would like to throw our Central Valley support into the support for our proposals we, J-Rod McGinnis, put in on the junior hunts. And in Craig's Stowers view of we losing the, or the department losing the veto on the Butte County hunt. I live in Sutter County, and I didn't even hear about that hearing where I could have attended. I know our members attended for the Tehama County hunt, which was in Red Bluff, and we were able to support the department on getting that. But I doubted if we had any archers, bow hunters at the Butte County hunt, because I live in Yuba City and I didn't even hear about it until today, which we could have overturned possibly. The late season hunts that were proposed originally as B-zone hunts, and now that was amended at the February meeting by Dr. McGinnis to possibly be A, C, or D-zone hunts in the late season for archery. We support those also if the department, if science, as far as our deer counts and everything, support them. We support those going forward. The bear validation issue. In reading, I printed out the proposals off the internet last night, and reviewing them, I see no change in the way bear tags are to be validated from what they were last year or in previous years, where in Southern California, we've had some problems saving the meat and finding a warden or a biologist or somebody to get that meat taken care of, where we can take it to the locker before it is spoiled on the bear validation and then the tooth removal. So we're still real concerned with that, the fact that it's not listed as proposed change. The refuge late season limited weapon hunt where archery, muzzleloader, handgun, which was our original proposal. I think we eliminated the muzzleloader and pistol because there wasn't a lot of support from them. But we would still like to see in the refuges where there's a lot of bear, the deer herds are in trouble because bear predate on deer. We would like to see that late season where an archer or bow hunter could spot and stalk, or I've been using for the last several years, a varmint calling bear in. And I've had real good luck as far as calling them in. I haven't had good luck of putting the tag on them, but I've had good luck calling them in where I do see them. And we would like to see that go to help the deer herds, as well as manage the bear in the refuges where they're running without any controls or management. I've got a couple of questions. In reviewing the printed proposed regs last night, I see where we're separating the A zone into a northern and a southern, a 110 and a 160, but yet the season dates open and close the same for both zones. And I was just wondering, and I know that 3 or 4 years ago we had the information where they were going to change, split those, but why did we stick with the same season dates if we needed to split them? I don't care who wants to answer that, but I have a question on that.
Yeah, just go ahead and finish with your comments, and
all right,
and we'll get to
The other question in listening to John's and Craig's report was on the pig tags. We're going to sell one at a time now, which we were aware of. But we'll still be allowed to take, on a weekend hunt, take more than one pig, right? Is that fella going to have to go back to town to purchase another tag before he can keep hunting? Or can we purchase five tags for $60?
Oh, yeah.
No, you can buy the tags all at the same time.
Yeah, so. Okay. Yeah. Okay. They're just, we're raising them $15, and there's no limit on how many tags we buy at one time.
As a matter of fact, given our budget situation, we're encouraging you to buy them by the case.
Okay, let me look at my notes and see. Oh, the last thing. We thank you for the extra elk archery tags that were proposed this year also, but we feel that it would be nice if we had more than five tags for the big northeast hunt, because that's a big area, and I understand from game warden up in that area and others that there's a good elk population where I think that we could use more than five archery tags in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. May I make a comment?
Commissioner Flores, go ahead.
I'm just trying to figure out the wisdom of the legislature. I didn't know the legislature were marketing experts. It's kind of interesting that we could have sold six tags of, you know, packet of six for $50 instead of, you know, $15 a piece, and probably would have sold more tags that way than individually. Now we're only going to sell two tags or three tags. Anyways, government. Anyway, thanks.
Did you want Mr. Carlson to respond to the questions or at the end of
the
entire testimony?
Well, let's wait till all the testimony.
Or Craig was. Okay. Stephen Bostain, followed by Ron Warner.
I'd like to thank the gentleman, Steve Abbott and Joe Becker, and they voiced my opinions very concisely. Thank you, guys. I have no more comments.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Ron Warner, followed by Arlo Strong.
Yes, good morning, Commissioners. I'm Ron Warner, and I'm chairman of the Tehama County Fish and Game Commission. And I'm here speaking on behalf of the J21 Either Sex Junior Hunt in Tehama County, C4 Zone. The Tehama County Fish and Game Commission has been working on this matter for approximately 3 years now. And by a 6-1 vote, we asked the Tehama County Board of Supervisors to hold a public hearing regarding the hunt. There were speakers from hunting clubs, archery clubs, as one gentleman mentioned, junior hunters, and the general public, along with people opposed to the hunt. It was probably evenly matched. In the months since a public hearing, I've been approached by many people who have been in favor of this hunt, and the fact that it will give junior hunters a greater chance to get out there and possibly get their first deer. Fish and game biologist Dave Walker gave an overview and a very informative talk to the Board of County, Tehama County Board of Supervisors, in respect to the herd. Would this affect the herd? And the fact that it's a hunt with tag numbers ranging from, I believe it's 20 to 80. We were asking for 50 for the first year, and then to be reevaluated, see if it affected the herd in any way. And at the end of the public hearing, the Board of Supervisors voted 4-1 in favor of supporting the deer hunt, which is the first time in a long while that Tehama County Board of Supervisors have approved an either-sex hunt. The one dissenting vote would have voted yes if we would have kept it as a one-year hunt and not two-year. We had a little bit of misinformation there. But he didn't mind the hunt. He just wanted it to be 1 year and then look it over. And we were under the impression that we had to go, it would be 2 years before the regulations would be changed again. Bottom line was, he was in favor of it. The Tehama County Fish and Game Commission hopes that the State Fish and Game Commission will approve the hunt and give the junior hunters of California a greater chance of getting drawn for a special hunt just for them and increase the chance of success for these young hunters, for they are the future of our hunting people. And I thank you for your time. If you have any questions, I'd be willing to answer them if I can.
Thank you.
Okay. Arlo Strong, followed by Mary Pfeiffer.
Arlo Strong. I mean, I'm opposing that doe hunt because I think we don't have the deer to start in with. And if you're going to have any deer, you can't kill off all your does. And if you're going to get any more bucks, you're going to have to slow this deer season down a little way somehow. The predators are killing their fawns faster than the does can have them. And you're talking about these kids hunting. These kids could hunt right in a regular hunting season. That's the way we had to learn when I was a kid. You get out there and you hunt right along with everybody else. And the deer in the mountains are not there, and the deer in the valley aren't there. Everybody says we got a lot of deer, and I don't know where they're at. I'm out in them hills all the time every day, and yet the deer are just not there. And if we keep killing these does, they're never going to have anything. And I think if you'd have one deer hunt, archery, rifle, and everything all at the same time, you're hunting these deer about three times, 3 months out of the year, and you've changed the whole cycle of the deer. You never used to see deer, does have fawns in July and August, and that's when they're having another, because we've changed this whole thing around. And there's plenty of feed out there for the deer to have. And the cattle and the deer like to run together, and the cattle come out of the mountains, and then what few deer was there came out just in good shape this year, better shape than they have in a long time. And if you're going to keep these does and keep these deer, we're going to have to start killing the mountain lions and the coyotes, and we're going to have to regulate this deer hunt somehow, some way, to take care of what we have. And thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Mary Pfeiffer, followed by Wally Roney.
Good morning, I'm Mary Pfeiffer. I'm the Shasta County Agricultural Commissioner, and today I'm also representing the California Ag Commissioners Association. I currently chair the Weed and Vertebrate Program Committee that we have. I realize that, as discussed earlier, that a number of changes will be taking place in the regulations having to do with nuisance trapping, but there is one particular issue I would still like to address in this particular forum. We have concerns regarding section 465.6. having to do with relocation of nuisance animals. Our primary concern has to do with the way it's currently written. There is no provision for express permission by a private landowner to receive relocated nuisance animals. We would strongly oppose that. Our feeling is that our agricultural lands, our resource lands, our rural residential lands could become targets for our perhaps not targets, but prime locations for relocation of those animals. And we don't believe that without the permission of the landowner that should occur. In my particular case, I live right outside the city of Reading on 20 acres, and quite frankly, I don't need additional predaceous animals on my property impacting my domestic animals. And that would be of concern to our agricultural producers. With that, we would request that that reconsideration be given to that particular section requiring express permission of private landowners for relocation of those types of animals.
Salky, you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I'm afraid you may be misinterpreting our intentions there. The Department of Fish and Game does not approve of moving anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just bad business for a lot of reasons. So we are not proposing changing that. It is currently illegal to move wild animals.
Right. We do understand it and frankly concur with that.
Okay.
With that requirement. But as I read it here, if a nuisance trapper receives permission from an assistant game warden or patrol chief, they could possibly relocate nuisance animals to someplace else.
Yeah, there are rare circumstances, but generally that's something we don't do for a lot of reasons, exactly as you expressed. So we'll double check, but that is not our intention.
Well, we certainly hope that you continue that policy and procedure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Wally Roney, followed by Gary Span Fleener, I think. Okay.
Good morning. appreciate you guys having this up here in Northern California, and I appreciate you guys coming all the way from Southern California for wherever to host this rather than to have us go all the way down for these comments. I'm president of the Tama County Cattlemen Association, also president of our local, my corporation. My family has been with this Tama deer herd all of our lives, dating back into the 1800s. I don't have any official counts, but we live with these deer not only in the wintertime, but in the summertime. We own property in Lassen County where these deer summer. We also own property in Tama County. So we're with these deer every day of our life. I was also, our ranch hosted the first 580 program in California with a late deer hunt because we had done extensive habitat improvement on our winter ranges and on our summer ranges. We discontinued that program once we saw the deer herd population on a decrease. I'm very much opposed, and the Tama County Cattlemen's Association are very much opposed this doe hunt when our deer population is on the decrease like it is. So my purpose here today is to put the commission on notice that we are very much opposed to it as long as this deer herd is on a decrease. If it turned around and was on an increase, that would be a different situation. When we discontinued our 580 program back in 1990, we haven't seen any increase in this deer herd population at all. It's on the decrease, and I'm scared that we're not going to be able to stop it. Are there any questions?
Are you representing the Cattlemen's Association from your area, not statewide Cattlemen's Association, correct?
That's right. This is just Tama County. That's where the deer herd.
And the state chapter knows of your position?
Yes.
Okay. Actually, that's not
season. It's for all four seasons.
So Tama is part of C zone, is it not? Is that correct?
Yes.
We issue about 11,000 tags currently.
For the four seasons.
For the four C zones. It's quite a bit. So we're only asking for an additional 20 to 80 tags, correct?
I understand. The number might not be significant, but the significance is that we're asking to kill does when our population is on a decrease.
Well, it's an either sex hunt, is it not?
Yes.
Okay. Nothing else?
Thank you.
Gary Spanfeldner, followed by Gordon Long.
Good morning, Commissioner Kellogg.
Good morning.
And other commissioners. My name is Gary Spanfeldner. I'm a landowner with property on the east and west side of Red Bluff. My family's ranch here since 1909. I spent my entire life working in the outdoors and observing wildlife. I'm also a hunter. I want to tell you that I'm absolutely against a doe hunt of any kind for any reason. The deer herd's been depleted by predators, and I mean cougars and coyotes, to a point where it's nearly impossible for them to rebound. The Department of Fish and Game will argue that by these young people shooting a few does from the herd, it won't affect the herd numbers and improves the health of the herd. Normally I would agree, but this is just not the case today. One cannot increase or improve the health of or the quality of the deer in this way because their numbers are already too low to affect any positive change. As I said, predators are the major problem with the decline of our deer herd, but long hunting seasons and two buck limits in the B zones are also just wrong. Roadkill in the past has also been a factor in their decline. It's been said that habitat is down. However, I can remember seeing 300 deer a day on our ranch in the 60s and 70s. Now, if I see three on a given day, I would feel lucky. On the east side, one could easily see double that number on the winter range in a day, and now 15 or 20 head is about the maximum one can expect to see. This drop occurred with no great change in their food supply or habitat. The Department of Fish and Game has said that this doe hunt is objected to for emotional reasons, but this is not true for me. If for some reason there were too many deer, or more specifically, does as there are in the south and eastern United States, I'd be in favor of a doe hunt here. I believe all wildlife should be managed as the wonderful resource that it is. We all have the responsibility to intelligently preserve our wildlife population, but must use common sense and wisdom to maintain a balance in nature between predators and prey. Why doesn't the Department of Fish and Game combine its knowledge with these environmental groups, which come under the title of farmers and ranchers? After all, who better to consult with than those who have spent their lives in the outdoors observing wildlife and practicing good range management and providing the habitat for the wild animals? Ironically, the Department of Fish and Game wants the same thing I do, to stimulate the interest in young hunters and encourage them in the sport of hunting. But I remember the doe hunt in 1956. I was there with my brother and my father, Easter Red Bluff. I was 11 years old. It was not a good memory. At the time, I believed the Department of Fish and Game had very good intent, but what happened turned out to be a disaster. It's not to say that many good hunters and sportsmen did not provide venison for the table, but as a child, I remember confused and panicky fawns running around wondering what happened to their mothers. Even fawns were shot because, having already lost their spots, they looked at a distance like a mature doe to an inexperienced hunter. However, what I feel caused the greatest loss to the deer herd was what happened to the fawns that were left after their mothers were killed. At that age, the fawns are too immature to care for themselves. Normally, a fawn stays with its mother till she has her next fawn in the following spring or early summer, 8 or 9 months later. At the time of the hunt, they were weaned but still very small and vulnerable to coyotes, so many perished. I have a hard time imagining a youngster going out and shooting a floppy-eared doe and being proud of him or herself. As I said, if there are too many deer, I would feel differently. But as far as I'm concerned, if the Department of Fish and Game doesn't do something to protect them, deer will become truly endangered. If the escalating cougar problems and the continuing coyote problem are not addressed soon, our hunters will have to purchase deer tags in other states to enjoy the sport they have, should have the right to enjoy in our own beautiful state. If that doesn't give you pause, think of the lost revenue and jobs this will mean to our already financially strapped state. And speaking of revenue, in 1990, Proposition 117, the Mountain Lion Protection Act, was established, setting aside $900 million to purchase habitat for mountain lions over a 30-year period. All of this for an animal that was never endangered. However, the proposition passed, and because of emotionalism and imprudent environmentalists and anti-hunting groups, now cougars have increased their numbers from 2,000 in the 70s to 6,000 to 8,000 or more today. Cougars are not preyed upon by any other animal in the wild. Think about that. Each cat kills and eats approximately 1 to 2 deer a week. That adds up to a loss of around 500,000 deer a year, not to mention livestock and domestic animals killed. And because mountain lions have lost their fear of man, even people have been threatened or killed. And for a state so desperately in need of funds, Proposition 117 is one of the biggest and most unnecessary wastes and frauds legislated in this state. The Department of Fish and Game has a responsibility to inform the general public of this deceit. It's time the truth be told about the deer losses to cougars and coyotes every year, and that the public be made aware of the growing danger due to an overabundance of mountain lions and coyotes. If the Department of Fish and Game really wants to encourage young hunters, they need to work aggressively to rebuild the deer population so young people can enjoy the thrill of a buck hunt and the mounting of those first horns on the wall. To do this, the department needs to work with Governor Schwarzenegger to redistribute what remains of the $900 million allocation still being used to protect mountain lions and appropriate it to this end. That includes instituting a predator control program before it's too late. In conclusion, I'd like to add that over the years, I've worked well with the game wardens that spend so much of their time in the field protecting our wildlife. I've known many, and we've been in agreement on most all issues. I appreciate their hard work and service to the state. However, due to cuts, their numbers have been drastically reduced. If redistributed, this $900 million misused revenue could also easily fund adequate numbers of game wardens in the field to bridge the gap between government and private landowners. Game wardens' discussions with farmers and ranchers are invaluable. If this input were sincerely considered, a broader and truer picture would be brought to the Department of Fish and Game's decision-making table, and I wouldn't need to be speaking here today defending against a doe hunt. 80% of the state's wildlife is found on private land, farms and ranches. We're all concerned about wildlife, and I thank you for the opportunity to address this commission. And this, my speech has been endorsed by the Tama County Farm Bureau. Thank you very much for your time.
Gordon Long, followed by Jim Bendinger.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Gordon Long with the California Deer Association. We are a statewide organization for the for deer hunters and deer management. I'm here to talk about also the J21 deer hunt. For the California Deer Association, we actually support this junior hunt. There are a couple important issues that need to be addressed in this topic. We do believe that junior hunts are a very viable option for the state, good for, you know, increasing hunters for California. One of the big issues is talking about is, you know, removal of does. Well, we must consider, talking with Dave Walker, they're saying there's probably going to be about 50 tags available. Most likely, the season is going to go for 44 days. So typically, if a junior is going to be in the field that long, there's a good chance they're going to shoot bucks anyway. Good chance there'll be very few does actually harvested until maybe the last 3 or 4 days. So that's probably not going to be an issue. Taking that, it's also important to think that removing some does is actually a good thing. Not only does it help sex ratios, but removing some of the older does that aren't producing is a good thing. I hate to, you know, to respectfully disagree with the Tehama County cattlemen's, but I think they would agree that if they have a cow that doesn't produce a calf, that cow does not stay on the herd. They remove it. Same issue comes with the deer. If there is a doe that is not a non-producing doe, then it needs to be removed, because that non-producing doe will either will have a poor fawn when it grows, you know, when it drops it, or it will not produce one at all. So what happens is that doe is possibly removing a habitat for a fawn that could, you know, either be a young doe that could be a productive doe or a buck. So there's some real issues as far as, you know, removing some doe, especially older does that are non-producing, is important. The California Deer Association is willing to actually help these junior hunters if they ask for it, or somehow get cooperation with the junior hunters to go out with them to select certain does. I think that's another important issue. In fact, we don't want to shoot fawns. We don't want to shoot does that are, you know, that do have fawns with them. So the California Deer Association is willing to either train the junior hunters or go out with the junior hunters and help select proper does for this. But at the same time, we don't think that many does will be shot if there's only 50 tags available. I bet, you know, a vast majority of the, you know, population likes to shoot bucks instead of does. So the numbers are going to be insignificant. Another issue is, you know, predators certainly are impacting all these populations in California. But that's more predators. And the fact that they are impacting the deer population is important, but it also is more of an issue, I think, showing that it's a habitat concern. Those deer are probably having to feed more out in the open than normal. And another issue is predators have not become super predators. They have not all of a sudden become better at what they do. I mean, these deer evolved with these mountain lions. They evolved with the coyotes. At some point, I mean, they will recover, and they, you know, it's survival of the fittest. These populations are wild, and they will, you know, do their thing. But it's important to think that I am not, you know, for this moratorium we've had since Prop 117. But at the same time, this predator issue is a lot, I think, concern over habitat, you know, degradation over the course of the years. But I said we do support the junior hunt in Tehama County. It's important to bring junior hunters into it. It's not going to impact the doe population, I think, in any significant manner, and it actually would be good to remove some of the decadent older does that are not producing fawns. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Jim Bendinger, followed by Camilla Fox.
Yes, my name is Jim Benninger. I live up at Dale Station, which is in an area where there's just immense numbers of does and bucks, you know, during the late season, and it's right at the bottom end of the Tehama deer herd migration. But in the last 8 years, there's been a steady decline in the deer on the ranch. It's a 20,000-acre ranch that I patrol on, and it is a hunting club. And I've been out there on the ranch for about 27 years, even when Dye Creek Preserve owned it. And to this day, I really can't see being able to pick out barren does. I've seen a few does that did look awful old and haggard, but about 30% of the does that come down onto the ranch are fawnless already. And if that was the only criteria, there would be numerous does, like almost half of the population, that do not have a fawn by their side. And this, of course, is due to predators being the main thing. And as far as range and feed and browse and everything, I spend a lot of time in the summer up at in the Chester area, which is definitely the winter grounds for the western, for the Tehama deer herd. I'm sure a portion of them come from there. And I can spend 2 or 3 weeks up there and see the same doe that stays within 200 or 300 yards of my camp for 2 or 3 weeks, and go back up 2 or 3 weeks later, and she's still laying within 100 yards of the same area. And that is the only doe I saw, the only deer I saw last summer, except at night driving out, which amounted to probably 3 or 4 more deer. And I mean, I covered a lot of ground up there fishing, and you'd see occasional tracks. And in one day, I found 2 sets of mountain lion tracks and 3 other places where they left their mark. Because I was a fur trapper for about 27 years, and in those years, I think probably the first 15 years that I trapped, never saw a lion. I saw a sign every once in a while. But in the last 5 years that I trapped, which was in the mid-90s, I saw mountain lions on the average of every 3 to 4 weeks. And I saw a sign any day that I wanted to go out and look, I could find fresh sign. And I was trapping in the area where the Tehama deer herd winters, and I would say that on the ranch, like Mr. Sponfellner said, you could go out and count 150 to 200 deer in a day during deer season. And I would say this was no less than 12 years ago. But every year it has gotten worse. And last year, the only extra problem we had last year is we didn't have any acorns in the lower area. So our deer population was down for that reason. But as far as the population, I do question if anybody can in Fish and Game can answer when the last deer count was made in the Tehama deer herd area, which was probably done in the winter time or the spring when they're gathering. But I do believe that if there was enough people out there to see what I've seen, I think it would be very evident that the deer population has declined so much in the last 3 years. And I was a coyote trapper on this ranch, and the coyote population is increased this past year more than any other year I've ever seen on the ranch. And that is really, I would say, between that and the mountain lions, I would say that is the biggest problem. Their deer herd is not going to increase Even if the browse was better or the hunting pressure was down, because there are so many lions out there compared to what there used to be, they cover a lot more ground where the deer do not have a place to really get away from them. And the family unit of a deer herd now, I would say, is about 3 to 8 deer, where normally you would see double that in a family unit. And I've been out there enough to where, and coyote calling and calling deer in with the coyote call, it was nothing to call in 15 to 30 deer in a basically a family unit that were feeding together and staying together. That gave them so much more protection from predators, where now with the family unit being 3 to 8 deer, it's so much easier for a lion to stalk the deer. And we even had a lion in court right in the middle of the day that was stalking some deer. One of the other patrolmen was on the ranch. And right in the middle of the day. So I'm definitely in agreement with a lot of what Mr. Spanfellner said, and definitely against the deer, the doe hunt, the either sex hunt, actually. Because one more thing, and then I'll finish up, but I talk to a lot of people that go up and down the Hogsback Road, because that's my main area that I patrol. And a lot of the people, when they're through hunting, after their period of 5 or 6 days camping in the late season, the G1, I stop and talk with them, and they ask me, where are all the deer? They all think they're down on private property. But with a good acorn crop year, the deer do move all the way down. That's been their trait for a long time. But as soon as there's any hunting pressure and they clean up a lot of the acorns, they move back up into the timber as soon as it's raining, because you'll find them up in the timber whenever it's like that, because one of their favorite things is mushrooms. And there's a lot of deer that do move back and forth. As far as the game wardens, I think if there was a way to fund an extra game warden for the east side and the west side.
Would you please sum up, please? Your 5 minutes has expired.
Okay, thank you. Well, I think that pretty much sums it up. Thank you.
Camilla Fox, followed by Virginia Hanley.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, commissioners. My name is Camilla Fox, and I'm the Director of Wildlife Programs with the Animal Protection Institute. I'm here speaking today on behalf of the 27,000 members of the Animal Protection Institute, the Earth Island Institute, the Association of Veterinarians for Animal Rights, and Animal Place, the Sanctuary. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. While the department has requested a delay to delay movement on its proposal to amend regulations pertaining to wildlife damage control trapping, we believe there are enumerated mandates under SB 1645 that the department must immediately adhere to and that cannot wait another 6 months until they are addressed. Specifically, I refer to the provisions within Section 4005 of Fish and Game Code that require that all persons providing trapping services for a profit to pass a test of his or her knowledge and skill in the field and to obtain a trapping license. It is our understanding that the department has not met its mandate under this new law. In the 2003 trapping season, only 133 trappers were licensed statewide, even though the department has acknowledged there are thousands of wildlife control trappers in the state. And it should be noted that the vast majority, if not all, of those 133 trappers licensed were commercial recreational fur trappers and not wildlife control trappers. The vast majority of wildlife damage control trappers throughout California continue to operate without a license or having been tested on their skills in the field of wildlife damage control. We have not raised this issue before because the department was making a good faith effort to move forward with the process of promulgating regulations to ensure proper testing and oversight of wildlife damage control trappers. However, the department's requested postponement of this process is of serious concern and one that we believe that the commission and the department must both seriously examine in regard to its legal mandates under Section 4005. In addition, the commission and the department must address the fact that the current trapper education manual, Get Set to Trap, is outdated, promotes illegal trapping methods, and do not address issues specific to the wildlife control operators. This issue cannot be postponed for another 6 months. At the Long Beach Commission hearing, API submitted a detailed proposal regarding regulatory changes that we believe are necessary to ensure proper oversight and adequate training of the burgeoning wildlife control trade. I would like to highlight several of our proposals today and address some of the questions and concerns that were put forth at the Long Beach meeting. We support the department's proposal to create a separate licensing system for wildlife damage control operators. However, wildlife control is a very different activity than the recreational pursuit of wildlife and has its own special needs and considerations that cannot be addressed through the simple fulfillment of requirements for the recreational or commercial pursuit of wild animals. As such, a separate training manual and exam should be developed that tests wildlife control operators on their skill and knowledge in animal damage control work. In our proposal, we have detailed the specific areas that should be covered in both the exam and the training manual. To ensure that the licensees are in fact competent in their field, all applicants should be required to pass the written examination with at least 80% proficiency before they are issued a trapping license. This is common in other states. We encourage the commission to require wildlife control licensees to provide their clients with a department-approved notice that informs the clients of state laws and regulations pertaining to wildlife trapping for profit, available control options, and includes a signed acknowledgement that the client agrees to the methods that will be used to address the wildlife conflict. Such a regulation has worked effectively in Connecticut and other states that recognize the importance of consumer protection and public education in this field. We provided a model consumer notification in our proposal. We strongly urge the commission to change the trap check time from daily to at least once every 24 hours, as mentioned in my testimony in Long Beach. A daily requirement can extend the amount of time an animal suffers in a trap beyond 24 hours for up to 47 hours. A 24-hour trap check time should be mandated for all trappers in the state, not just wildlife control trappers, but also fur trappers. And it should be noted that more than 24 states currently require a 24-hour trap check time. I think it's 27. Commissioner Hattori raised the question at Long Beach as to whether or not the commission could actually do this. And we had a number of attorneys review the codes and the regulations surrounding trap check time. And they have determined that per section 4009.5 of the Fish and Game Code that the commission does have the ability to change the trap check time. We strongly urge the commission to promulgate regulations that require that wildlife control operators employ reasonable and prudent measures to prevent the orphaning of dependent wildlife or abandoning of young animals within a structure. Again, this is part of the package for the wildlife control operators. 13 bat species are listed as species of special concern in California. To ensure their protection, the commission should adopt regulations that call for exclusion as the sole method of removing bat colonies from structures. This should be allowed only during non-maternal colony season, which is September to April. Again, this is common practice in a number of other states, and I believe there will be bat specialists speaking today on this issue. This would not preclude individual bats from being removed from within a structure when needed. We also would like to see regulations implemented that restrict body gripping traps that pose a hazard to threatened and endangered species and also to family dogs and cats. This was also detailed in our proposal, and I won't go into greater detail today on this. In addition, we strongly recommend that the commission promulgate regulations that provide for training and continuing education of wildlife damage control trappers, and this will ensure that the department meets its requirement to ensure that all trappers are proficient, competent, and skilled in their field. California has the opportunity to set a high standard for the wildlife damage control trade that ensures professionalism, proper oversight and accountability, and humane animal care and handling. The Commission has the opportunity and indeed legal mandates under SB 1645 to address this issue and ensure competence and proficiency of those involved in this trade, as well as proper testing and licensing. We urge the Commission to adopt the proposed regulations put forth in our proposal and welcome continued collaboration with other stakeholders and agencies on this issue. For the record, I would also like to express our strong support for the Department's proposal to amend Section 251 by prohibiting the use of aircraft to locate big game 48 hours before and until 48 hours after big game hunting season. We agree with the department that using aircraft to locate big game is unethical and contradicts any notion of fair chase. We urge you to support this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob, before you even ask the question, I didn't realize we were out of speakers speaking on the junior hunt, and I promised the speakers on the junior hunt that we would have the department biologists respond to some of the questions, and I want to do that before we get in to the trap and testimony stuff. So you can ask her questions while she's up there now, but as soon as we're done with this, we're going to let the department respond to the junior hunt questions.
Sure. And I didn't want to mix them. I just wanted to ask Ms. Fox one quick question, and I do want to get back to the junior hunt too. We get a letter from Director Broderick, and John Carlson mentioned it earlier, that all of you have been working together to put together this trapping regulation package, and that I know we all talked in Long Beach last month. It was agendized for today, and now we're putting it off till June. It seemed like in Long Beach last month, all of you folks were this close to all coming together on a whole lot of issues, and I'm hearing you today mentioning that you agree with some of the department recommendations, and your concerns for two of them, say on the licensing and on the information the department gives out, you say need to be addressed immediately, because if we're doing a hearing on it on June, noticing it until July, it won't be implemented till like September or something, August. And are those your two concerns, the licensing of the nuisance people and the fact that we give out information that's illegal? And then the rest of it we can still work together on.
Right. Yeah, our immediate concern right now with the postponement is that with signing of SB 1645 in 2002, the department does have a mandate to properly train, which means that they must meet proficiency, competency, and skill, and that's all in current code, the trappers, the wildlife control trappers. So they must meet that criteria, and that also they must be licensed. Now, we worked with the department we actually helped with some of the test questions and also the components of the training manual. Our understanding is that the wildlife control trappers are not currently being licensed out in the field, and also that they're not currently implementing that new training guide and replacing the Get Set to Trap, which, of course, we have expressed great concern over, given that they promote
right
leg hold traps and other methods that are absolutely illegal in California.
Okay, so then two quick, Sankey. Is there any way without us doing a regulatory package change, we can maybe stop sending out Get Ready to Trap since it's illegal information we're sending out? And number two, can you address that one, the question about licensing? And then I'm thinking that we can move on with this until June, but I'm just saying we shouldn't be sending out illegal information, and if we are, we should stop. And I'm wondering about the other things that Ms. Fox is asking.
Yeah, we are actually implementing a lot of the things we've been talking about that don't require any regulation change. We're updating a bunch of manuals. It's taking a little time, of course. The other thing is the relative to animal control operators, they are licensed but under different entities. One of the problems we've run into is the fact that there's more than just Fish and Game and the Commission involved in this question, and it's created quite a legal tangled web that we're unraveling. We've been having some recent meetings with some of these other entities, permitting entities, and we're trying to get it unraveled, but we're not ready. That's one of the reasons we're asking for the continuance. This is a lot more complicated, and these industries are obviously going through their agencies that they currently go through, and we're engaging them, trying to unravel.
There's still ongoing discussions before June, hopefully, that can resolve some of these things. Okay, all I want to say is, since we have agreed to put it off until June, I'll be glad to work with you and the department and other people to work on these other things, because we need to get back to the junior deer hunt, because we promised these folks we would. But I'm concerned about this, and I want to make sure that the department works with you and we all continue to talk about this. So we can talk after this meeting now, because I don't think we're going to take any action on anything today. But
okay,
I hear you is what I'm saying.
Thank you. And okay. I just will comment that I realize things take an incredible long time, especially in state agencies and when there's built-in bureaucracy. But at the same time, this bill was passed in 2002, so there are aspects of that that really should be implemented immediately, and that is our concern with the 6 months. The other parts of the package in terms of other regulations having to do with wildlife control operators, we recognize there may be some outstanding legal questions that need to be addressed, and we look forward to continued collaboration with the department on that. Thank you.
Okay, now I want to give the department an opportunity to respond to some of the questions, and also if there was somebody in the audience who wanted to talk on the specific issue of the junior hunt, and it doesn't look like we have any more cards, you need to put a card in so we can get you heard before we leave this issue. Thank you.
Did you have a specific question you wanted to ask me, or you just want me to respond?
Well, yeah, there was some comments made about the decline in the deer herd, and I'm kind of curious, and I think the other commissioners as well, what the department could provide us in the way of numbers, what the success ratio was for this year's hunt.
We don't have the final figures for this year's hunt yet. We're going to wait until March 15th to finalize the database, because we always get tags trickling back in much later than the time frame we need to have to prepare the environmental documents. So there's going to be two sets of final or harvest figures. One you're going to have an environmental document, and then one we're going to use that's going to have an additional few tags that have trickled in since December 31st. So I don't have the final kill figures there. I do have this year's postseason buck ratio and population estimate to give. And in zone C4, we have a buck ratio objective of 20, and this year we had a observed buck ratio of 26, and we had an estimate
to per 100.
Yeah, yeah. Explain that for
oh, right.
It's Commissioner Hatoi's benefit.
26 bucks per 100 dose. Okay. So that's the buck ratio. It would be the same for fawns, only there would be X number of fawns per 100 dose. So that's what that is. Okay.
Can you talk about carrying capacity a little bit? You know, I know it's an extensive discussion, but I wonder if you can break that down a little bit. And the other thing is, I always harken back to, what was it, 57, 58, the doe hunts. There's some, some data that you can talk about what happens and what occurs after doe hunts, some of the benefits, if you could.
I can give you a real simple version of carrying capacity, because that's how I deal in everything. Okay. Basically, carrying capacity is the ability of the environment to support a population. From my point of view, anytime you look out at a population, you're pretty much seeing a population at carrying capacity. Regardless of what is influencing that population, whether it's habitat issues or predation issues, they all fold into the carrying capacity of a population. So what we're seeing with California's deer is populations that are pretty much at carrying capacity now. They're fairly stagnant in terms of reproduction. Many of them are suffering long-term low-level decline. It's something we can follow down with our data collection. So all the deer out there now are what the habitat can support, regardless of what the forage condition is like. If the predators are taking them, you know, the predators are a component of carrying capacity. So what's out there now is what the habitat can support. Without any changes in land management practices, predator control, or any of those other issues, the only option we have and it's not even increasing carrying capacity, it's basically turning over the population within the carrying capacity. So every time you remove an animal that's at, say you take a doe from a population that's at carrying capacity, that doe is going to create, the removal of that doe is going to create space or room or additional resources for young deer to grow up and survive. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're facing now is populations, deer populations in California that are skewed fairly heavily to the doe side of the scale, and even amongst that, they're fairly heavily skewed to older age does. So that's a result of bucks-only hunting. So to answer your question about the 56 hunt, I was not around for that, but many of you apparently were, and the stories that they tell are exactly the ones that I heard.
And let me be clear that I wasn't around.
I believe that. That basically the last 3 days of that season, you were allowed to take anything with hair. And a lot of deer were killed. There's no doubt about it. And it was a public relations nightmare from what I hear. But in biological terms, 4 or 5 years later, in the early 60s, California had its record buck kills for 3-4 years in a row. And I can tie that directly to the space that was created by the removal of those does, which allowed additional bucks to enter the population and thrive. So,
I just have to ask my elementary learning about these questions, so help me walk through this. I heard from the folks, and I've listened, and the proponents explained that there are enough deer out there based on your assessments, the department's analysis, and the amount of permits that are issued in that region. They're asking for 50 permits for a junior hunt, as I understand it. That is an either sex hunt, even though everybody's talking about the does, and you said the population are skewed towards the older does, and others have explained the does as being beautiful, floppy-eared, you know, frolicking around with their young fawns, and others say they're old, decrepit does, and those what need to be taken. But in reality, as I'm understanding it, what happens if we vote for this deer hunt is 50 new permits for a junior hunt will take place. It doesn't guarantee or require that the junior hunters take a doe, either beautiful and floppy-eared or old and decrepit. They can take bucks, too. And is that am I wrong? Oh, mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that all 50 will be new, smiling, young does. But also, and I'm wondering, therefore, if it is a herd that's healthy, some claim it's not. That seems to be anecdotal, and I don't doubt them. I'm just not seeing any science on that. This should not have too much of a significant impact on the healthy herd that's out there in Tehama County. So what I'm asking you is, this isn't a guaranteed 50 doe take hunt, is it?
Absolutely not. Okay. And you have a pretty good handle on the rest of it, too.
Okay.
Out of these 50 tags, they'll all go through the draw, no doubt. And I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 probably won't hunt at all. And we may, I'm just taking a wild guess, but based on past hunts with this tag numbers, we probably won't take more than 10 does on the hunt. The rest will be bucks. And I doubt very strongly if we'll even take 25 deer total on this hunt.
And one more thing. I'm just learning about deer hunting, folks, so if I say things unintelligent, I'm learning. Why are junior hunts just encouraged to be separate from the normal hunting season, just to bring juniors out there and teach them about hunting when the rest of the big guys aren't out there? I mean, why can't it all be combined?
Well, basically, many of our zones are draw zones, and all of our additional hunts are draw hunts, and
okay.
It's very, very difficult for the smaller pool of junior hunters to compete with
Got
the
it.
Larger pool of adult hunters.
Got
so,
it.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey,
Craig, what do we issue, about 11,000 tags for that zone?
Yes, that's about right.
Yeah. So and I think the range is between 20 and 80 and not necessarily 50, so we can go anywhere in there.
Right.
On those, so. Okay.
Okay.
Any other questions from commissioners?
I think there's a question from the audience. Oh, yeah, there was
The A-zone question. A-zone. Sorry, Joe. That isn't being done for any other reason than right now for a record-keeping reason. It's a way for us to segment and compartmentalize the data we collect throughout the A-zone into a northern A-zone and a southern A-zone. Now, that data that we collect and analyze may lead us to propose new hunts because we're sort of depooling that big pool of data, breaking it up into two segments. So that's the reason it was done. And that's the reason the dates for both halves remain the same, because we haven't collected the data to make any changes. We're just getting that process started.
Okay. I have one more question, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
The anecdotal stories about the increase in mountain lions and the take. We haven't done mountain lion counts for a long time, right? Do we know that? I mean, are there more deer, and that's why people see lions taking them, or there are more lions? I don't know the answer to that, and I'm wondering, what do we know out there, or what do you suspect or see?
I don't know either myself. I have opinions, but I don't think this is the place to present them. So,
no, we can have opinions. You have to be the scientist.
Right. I think what you're seeing out there is deer herds that are going to continue to suffer these gradual long-term declines in population sizes until we change some philosophies in land management activities. The populations are a direct reflection of the habitat quantity and quality. If you don't have either one of them, you're going to be suffering in numbers. And I think there are many, many things that we could do to improve deer numbers. However, I am not in the business of multiple use management.
Right, and I'm not advocating mountain lion hunting.
Right.
I'm just saying there could be a number of causes.
No doubt.
Okay.
It's a tangled web.
Yep. Okay, thank you. We'll learn more about it later.
Thank you. Before we continue forward, I just want to remind everybody that we did post on our webpage the fact that the department had postponed the trapping regulations. And I realize that people may not have had time to notice that. That being said, this commission welcomes public input. We want to hear what people's ideas and their concerns are. And because people did show up here to talk about some of the things that have been postponed and withdrawn, we're going to show our appreciation for you showing up and hear from you. I just would ask that you be cognizant and fair to everybody when we say that we're limiting the speeches to 5 minutes. There's a red light that comes on when your 5 minutes is up at the podium you're speaking from. And I ask that once you see that red light come on, that you wrap up your comments in fairness to the next person so they will have as equal time. With that, we'll continue on.
Thank you, sir. Virginia Hanley, followed by Eric Paulson.
Hello, Virginia Hanley with the Fund for Animals. And first off, concerning the trapping regulations, I would like to concur with the comments that are made by Camilla Fox. The sponsor of SB 1645 was the Fund for Animals, our organization, and it was a concern about the numbers of trappers that were out there that were completely unidentified, unregulated, unlicensed. And 1645 is in effect now. By the passage of that law, automatically things came into enactment, and one of that is the licensing. Now, during the course of the bill going through the legislature, there was thoughts then, well, maybe we should be listing the animals in the legislation. Well, the law says it's non-game animals as designated by the commission. So it is your responsibility to designate those animals, and I would suggest you do it as quickly as possible, because right now it covers all non-game animals, so those under 4152 or 4180. The reason that I, as the sponsor of the legislation, did not particularly want to put it into the law was because the commission has already shown by the environmental documents what species that are of interest to them and which they have required licenses in the past. So the licensing is already in effect. Under that, automatically, the people that are licensed come under the existing regulations, and that the existing regulations require them to be tested, require them to put in a report, require them to limit their killing methods. There are already exemptions in the existing law. Now you're being asked for additional exemptions, but there are already exemptions in the law that can be observed. There are changes and additions that we would like to see, which have been proposed to put in those regulations, one of them among many others, but the commission can define what they consider to be daily, and that definition could be defined as 24 hours to ban carnivore traps on land because they are killer traps and are most effective in the water because they are going primarily after muskrats. I also point out that you have trappers out there and people and professions who have multiple licenses. That is not unusual. So because somebody is under a pest control license, they're probably, many of them are already under other licenses. I know I've was told of one who has six different licenses. Many of them are not even trapping these animals. It wouldn't even come under this licensing requirement. So to automatically exempt them is certainly not appropriate. Secondly, I'd like to comment on the proposed hunting regulations. And we're always happy when we can support recommendations by the department. And the whole concept of fair chase and the ethics of hunting is one which I think this commission should be examining at all times. Of course, one of the first recommendation is to ban the use of these ultralight planes, ban their use of any planes 48 hours before the season and after the season. This is certainly in the interest of fair chase and the ethics of hunting. Also, the use of telemetry and these specific kind of scopes, heat sensing devices, and actually sabotaging the department and animals that have tracking devices on them, and being to have other people be able to use to take advantage and abuse those that technology in order to unfairly kill big game species is something that this commission should definitely be in support of banning any sort of activity like that. Concerning the doe hunts, and I've told this commission any number of times, you should be listening to the local people who are telling you what's happening to their populations that they see when those populations are going down. And that they, you should not be having any doe hunts. Junior hunts, you always talk about people that have been hunting all their lives since they were 9 years old. We didn't have junior hunts back then. What is this big deal that we have to have the junior hunts? They can go out with their fathers, and if you need to have children hunting, personally, I don't think the children should be encouraged to go out and kill animals for fun. We talk about hunter opportunity. If I have to read hunter opportunity any more time in these proposed regs, it's not in your mission statement. It's certainly in your policies. It's not in your mission statement. And just increasing the opportunities constantly, you have other things that you should be thinking about too, and not just maximizing hunting. Please maximize your protection of wildlife. Thank you.
Eric Paulson, followed by Keith Carley.
Good Thank you very much, gentlemen, for giving me the opportunity to speak to you this morning. My name is Eric Paulson, and I am from Pest Control Operators of California. We represent the structural pest control industry here in California. We have about 1,600 members, and those members are primarily companies, and they employ approximately 17,000 to 18,000 licensees of the Structural Pest Control Board. I'm here to speak in regards to the trapping regulations. I'm glad to hear that they've been pulled, and there are going to be some work to try to look at exactly how they should be drafted. One of the challenges and concerns which has come up, I appreciate Virginia Hanley for addressing, is the issue, as we understand 1645 by its original statement of reasons and the way it was drafted, was it was intended to address unlicensed activity. The Structural Pest Control Board has specifically licensed and regulated the activity of trapping vertebrate pests in and immediately around structures since the 1930s. They have testing, continuing education specifically for this regard. The Structural Pest Control Board has approximately 22,000 licensees, 13,000 of which are empowered and are required to obtain continuing education in regards to trapping these vertebrate pests. The situation we find ourselves in is 1645, as we saw it, and the reason why we never made any comment on it was to capture this group of unlicensed individuals. The Structural Pest Control Code allows for unlicensed activities, certain practices that are not specifically structural pest control and do not have to be licensed. Similarly, the California Department of Pesticide Regulation licenses approximately another 20,000 licensees that they regulate, test, and require continuing education for trapping. And it's our understanding that 1645 is supposed to specifically address the issue of wildlife damage control operators that are not either structural pest control licensees or licensees of the Department of Pesticide Regulation who have been and are currently regulated and licensed to practice this specific activity. I was going to be commenting specifically on Section 459, but it's my understanding that has been pulled. And my understanding is that it's your position that you want to exempt perhaps specific species that would be allowed to be trapped. And it's our position that right now the law already provides for the licensure of structural pest control licensees, and we would rather the code specifically exempt that class of licensees. We've been told there will not be any enforcement action for rats and mice and a few common structural pests. However, our members and our licensees currently trap for a wide variety of vertebrate pests. The three species that are not identified under your pulled draft 459 would be skunks, opossums, and raccoons. And those are animals that right now, daily, there are licensees trapping. And it is the position of the Structural Pest Control Board that they have every legal right to do that. And so it is our request that you would encourage staff to work with us. It is our request, and is also the request based on a meeting I had yesterday with both the Structural Pest Control Board and the Department of Pesticide Regulation and some of your staff, that both the Structural Pest Control Board and the Department of Pesticide Regulation, their position is that their licensees are not covered under SB 1465, I believe, was the law that enacted these regulations. So we would ask that you would work with our industry to recognize the law that's currently in place. And if, in fact, you feel that it does apply to us, then we need to have appropriate exemptions for those pests or whatever needs to be done so that we can continue with our business as we have been currently licensed for, in the case of the structural pest control industry, for close to 80 years. Thank you very, very much for your time, gentlemen.
Keith Carley.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Keith Carley. I'm speaking to you today on behalf of the California Trappers Association. I'm a trapper. I'm the real thing. I don't trap termites. I trap predators and fur bearers. I'm a commercial trapper. With a commercial trapping license, I've been allowed to also address depredation needs, so that I can take my commercial trapper's license, under the authority of it, I can address problem animals and do problem animal solving for ranchers, farmers, water districts, etc. That is trapping. With the proposed two licenses, a depredation license and a commercial license, I'm going to have to now buy another license. That is a problem. And I hope that you folks will consider that when we further address this issue. But being that we do have a postponement until June, I'm looking forward to working with the department on the trapping regs. We certainly do have input. I see that we have the animal rights folks here today, as usual, just to go ahead and stir that pot of beans, because I don't mind ever stirring them up a little bit. The California Trappers Association is proposing a river otter trapping season, and we'll have more detail on that, but that'll give them something to work on. All righty, we certainly do thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
Wait, I'd like to say one thing, just because we're going to have to take this up in June, and obviously you're a intelligent and passionate person about your point of view, and I know that Ms. Fox and Ms. Handley are intelligent, passionate people about their views, and I would hate for us to take pot shots across each other's bows and walk out. I would really recommend that you sit down and talk to them, and they sit down and talk to you, and just try to see where you can agree and where you can't agree. We'll be making those decisions. But just let's try a little different outlook this time, because these are a new regulatory package. It's going to impact your life and livelihood. It's going to impact what they're passionate about. And I know there's a history of, you know, one-liners and dismissing, you know, each other's point of views, but I'm just thinking, let's try a little harder to try to come to some kind of conclusions, because we have to vote on this in June, and I'd like both of your input as much as possible and to be as respectful as possible.
I can assure you that we'll certainly continue working with the animal rights and the department. We have for years.
Cool.
There's a tradition here, as you mentioned,
right.
And that's that we have to realize, Commissioner, is that those folks are trying to shut me down. They're trying to remove me from my chosen profession.
Oh, yeah.
They're trying to prevent me from pursuing this that I choose to pursue, okay? I'm not trying to prevent them from protecting animals.
No, I understand.
Okay.
I understand. Okay. And somewhere in the middle, we have to regulate this. So I'm just saying it'd be better for you guys to work on it a little more rather than for us to decide in some kind of vacuum. That's all. But I understand.
Right. We'll certainly be working together, and also too, it's a great deal of fun to agitate the animal.
Oh, and I'm an agitator, so I'm okay. Agitating for, you know, for a little more working together. That's all.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I believe the rest of the cards that I have on this item, the box if necessary is checked. So if anyone would like to provide comments and you turn in a card, please come up now, and or if you haven't turned in a card. Okay. Sir, since you're up there, please.
My name is Steve Hebert. I'm the guy that Ms. Fox doesn't like. I'm a nuisance trapper, and thank you for letting us speak today. Conibears are not merely for muskrats. They're a perfect tool for ground squirrel control. We've tried working with Ms. Fox. I've had several conversations with her, and unfortunately, her way is the only way she wants it. I've done this for 26 years, members. I'm currently licensed in two categories: structural and agricultural, for trapping gophers and moles and ground squirrels and skunks. I would just really love to hear somebody talk to me that has a desire to work this out, because under their terms, it's just not going to work. Thank you.
Mr. Horn.
My name is Lloyd Horn. I make my home in Richvale, California, which is in Butte County, in the center of the rice industry east of the Sacramento River. I've been a trapper for 57 years. I also was the manager of the Richvale Irrigation District for 26 years. I am also the vice president of the California Trappers Association. And I'm here today to say that I think this commission should be encouraging trapping in California, because what better way is there to control predators and bank burrowing rodents than the trapper? I have, as I say, I've been a trapper for 57 years, and I did all this trapping within the area of my irrigation district, and I have trapped over 45,000 muskrat in that period of time. It is absolutely necessary that we have trappers, freelance trappers, in our area to control bank burrowing rodents. Now, and we not only have muskrat in the area, we have beaver moving into the agricultural area by the hundreds, if not thousands. I am an animal damage control trapper as well as a commercial trapper. I get calls from orchardists and rice growers every few days, especially during the summer months. I, as far as I know, am the only trapper that is active in Butte County, except for the government trapper. I see no future for young people coming up in the trapping industry unless the commission and the fish and game encourage trapping rather than discourage it. All I have received in the recent months and years is more regulations, more restrictions designed to discourage trappers. My last statement is I'm an old man and I'm not going to be around much longer as a trapper. You're going to miss us. You're going to miss us dearly when we are gone.
Well, I just want to say that while you are still around, you need to engage with the department because you're the professional that's been doing this all these years, and they need that input from the...
I would be happy to meet with you at any time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah, if you want to speak, please come up and stand over on the side there.
Hi, I'm also someone that's, I guess, in the middle of all this. I'm a private nuisance wildlife control operator. I belong to the National and the California Nuisance Wildlife Control Operators Association, the CTA, and I've also got a pesticide license because it's one of those old requirements you guys had on us. I wanted to thank you for delaying the implementation or looking over these proposed changes in the regs, because we've got a whole lot of concerns about the consequences of some of those statutory changes, and we're looking forward to talking to you guys in the future about what our industry would like to see implemented. I guess that's about all I have to say. Thank you very much for your time, and we'll talk to you soon before June.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Last call. Okay, thank you. We appreciate everyone coming and providing your comments to the commission at this time. As I indicated earlier, the commission will again be receiving public comments at its April 2nd meeting, which will be in Sacramento. It'll be held at the Resources Building, 1416 9th Street. At the conclusion of the public testimony at that time, the commission will determine its intentions of those regulations. They would like to continue to review and evaluate, and then on April 22nd, through a teleconference meeting, the commission will be adopting the regulations. For the most part, these regulations will become effective July 1st of 2004. Also point out that the department has done environmental documents on each of the proposed hunts, and those documents have been circulated for public review and comment. The public comment period will end on March 15th, so we encourage anybody that has specific comments on any of the environmental documents to provide those to the commission office in writing by March 15th. Are there any questions of the commissioners before we leave this item?
No, we're ready to move on to the next item.
Okay. The next item is receipt of public testimony on proposed amendments to Section 7.50B 91.1 of Title 14, California Code of Regulations, regarding the Klamath Trinity salmon and steelhead regulations. Commissioners have been provided with copies of the proposed changes to these regulations. The commission at its February 6th meeting in Long Beach authorized its staff to publish notice of its intent to consider amendments to these regulations. That legal notice has been published. And as I indicated, the commissioners have copies of the proposed changes. The department is prepared to summarize those proposals, and then we'll receive public comments. Mr. Larson, are you going to do that, or Mr. Neil Manji will be making the department's presentation on the Klamath Trinity regulations? As Mr. Manji's coming up, I'll point out that the department has, since February, has an additional amendment to these proposed changes, and which has required an additional 45-day review. So the commission will not be considering adoption of these regulations until its May 4th meeting in San Diego. Mr. Manji.
Thank you. Welcome, commissioners, commission staff. Neil Manji, Northern California, North Coast Region, Fish and Game. As Mr. Traynor mentioned, I'm here to briefly go over this year's Department of Fish and Game's recommendations for Klamath Trinity regulations. Prior to this, I'd like to briefly go over how the run was in 2003. A few points. It's estimated that the total basin escapement for the Klamath Trinity this year were 195,000 Chinook salmon, and that represents the seventh largest run since 1978, since we've been monitoring the fisheries. So it's not bad. Approximately 90,000 of those fish spawn naturally in the basin, and that's of significance due to the 35,000 naturally spawn the floor that is required to spawn in the Klamath Trinity system based on harvest allocations. So we are well above our floor. The 2003 in-river sport fishery was allocated 10,800 fish, which came to about 26% of the allowable harvest. And I'll go into that a little bit later also. And from that 10,800, Klamath Trinity sport anglers caught 9,700 fish. So they were relatively close this year. As Mr. Traynor mentioned, at the February meeting, Mr. Larson mentioned that the department had prepared an initial statement of reasons for changes in the Klamath Trinity regulation package. I'll go over that very briefly and then talk about what Mr. Traynor talked about prior to this is the changes that occurred since the February meeting that required the amendment. So, first of all, there was a clarification proposed to determine a new area for quota management. Historically, we used an area called Coon Creek Falls, which is a rapids on the Klamath River to determine or break up the fishery. 50% of the fish that's allocated to inrear sport anglers would be allocated below the falls at Coon Creek, and 50% would be allocated above. Well, there happens to be two Coon Creeks that come into the Klamath River, and it continued to continue to be very confusing to lots of anglers. So the department is proposing that we change that area to the Highway 96 bridge at Wichipec. And for clarification, that's about a 6-mile difference upstream from the Coon Creeks, and it's a non-issue, very easily identifiable. The department also is conforming with, or the climate change regulations would like to conform with terminal gear and rigging restrictions that are consistent throughout the remainder of the state for all streams and rivers. So the department would propose that the gear and rigging restrictions for the Klamath Trinity follow that which the commission adopted in the December meeting for the general regs of 2.10. And that's, I won't go into that, but basically it's a hook size in gear rigging restrictions. The Klamath was very, very close to those regulations last year. Knowing that we were on a general regulation package cycle, that I tried to make the two very similar, so when I was in front of you today, that we would have a very similar package and not have to do a wholehearted change on that. At the February meeting, the department indicated that the run was very large, like I said, the seventh largest, and that the department may alter the daily bag, the weekly bag, and the possession limit for Chinook salmon. And I will go into that a little bit later on the amendment, but that has changed also. At your December meeting, I believe President Kellogg asked the department to review the potential to open up angling opportunities to catch and release on New River. And the department came up with three options and have met with stakeholders, and I'll go into that when I talk about the amendments also. So that's basically what occurred, what the department has presented at the February meeting. This particular meeting, like Mr. Trainer mentioned, there were a few changes between February and now in the initial statement, one of which required the department to amend the initial statement, and there are three changes. The first one I'd like to discuss is the options for opening up New River to catch and release. After having met with the public proposals, authors, and also Cal Trout, the department can and has a consensus on option three being the most conservative, and if the commission were to open up the New River, that we are all in support of option three, which allows angling on New River catch and release artificial barbless from the East Fork down to the mouth of the Trinity, or actually to the mouth of the New River, which was the area that was historically open. So we are in agreement there. The second one is based on the projections at this past week's Klamath Fisheries Management Council, the number of fish in the ocean that are Klamath origin aren't as high as once expected. So there's a high probability that the Pacific Council will take action that the quotas will be relatively low this year compared to last year. So with that, the department would like to retract its proposal to increase the bag limits from one adult to two adult. And we would basically maintain no change alternative, which would be three Chinook per day, only one of which could be an adult over 22 inches, and stay with the four adults for seven consecutive days and no more than four adults in a 12 fish possession limit. What was initially proposed was to increase it to 2 adults per day, 6 per week, and 6 adults in any in possession. So we maintain the no change alternative. And then once again, at your February Fish and Game meeting, the commission tentatively adopted for modeling purposes as a 15% allocation for in-river sport anglers. This particular regulation is why we needed to come back it's not why we needed to come back and amend it, but at that particular meeting, the commission did adopt the 15%. After the KFMC meeting, that projection is much lower now, so the department is going to pull back the bag limit, daily bag possession limit, but also, for your information, 15% would approximately be about 5,000 fish for the in-river quota this year. That's give or take a few fish based on ocean harvest modeling, which is about half of what we were last year. The third change that facilitated the amendment was the department is now proposing the retention of 1 wild steelhead in the main stem Klamath River. This change, like I said, precipitated an amended initial statement with the 45-day notice requirement. This will delay Fish and Game Commission adoption until May. This should not be a problem based on the fishery not beginning until sometime in August. So we still have time to produce any supplement if the commission were to vote on that particular topic. The retention of 1 adult steelhead is new to the Klamath Klamath system. In 1997, I believe, as you are aware, the department closed all take of wild steelhead throughout the state except for the Smith River, and that was based on a memorandum of understanding with NOAA Fisheries. At the time, Klamath Mountain Province steelhead were a candidate species for being listed. Since then, NOAA Fisheries has deemed that the fishery is not warranted for listing, and for the last year to 2 years, the department has maintained the no take of a wild steelhead. We've had several letters written to us in the past and also this past year that suggesting that the department considered the take of wild steelhead in the system. We have analyzed that now and feel that one of the most conservative approaches would be to only allow the retention of wild steelhead in the upper 7 miles of the main stem Klamath River. Klamath is about 198 miles long. This would be from the area from I-5 Bridge to Iron Gate Hatchery. It would be very similar to the regulations on the Smith River, which allows the take of 1 wild steelhead per day, no more than 5 in possession per season. The department for the Klamath is proposing that the 1 fish per day be consistent, but only allow 3 fish per season for an individual angler. In addition, the season on the Klamath River for the retention of 1 wild steelhead would only encompass the time frame from November 1 through February 28th, which is a much shorter season than on the Smith, where it's open all year round there. At this particular time, I can answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions or comments from the commission? Thank you. Good report.
Thank you.
I'm glad you did. The new river thing, everybody agrees with the recommendation.
Correct.
Okay.
No, but I mean, up until then. Our first speaker will be Mr. E.B. Dugan, followed by Rudy Ramp.
Morning, Commissioners. Welcome here to beautiful Redding. My name is E.B. Dugan. I'm a Trinity River fishing guide, member of TAMWEG, and also I'm a representative of guides and river communities and lodges along the Trinity River. I have met in Willow Creek with Neil Manji, and quite a few of our group have met there at different times. And we concur with practically all of Mr. Manji's requirements. It took a long, hard battle to hammer out what we felt was fair and just. One of the things that I would like to bring to you, and I have two papers that are stapled together, and I think all of you have a copy of them, but prior to this, I'd like to preface my testimony with just a little bit of insight that I have seen or look at. The recent increase in license fees, I believe, may have shot yourselves in the foot. First, doubling the guides and outfitters' license fee is only going to make more illegal people out there guiding. We already have a problem with that, and many of us try to help Fish and Game corral them and make it a better equal opportunity. Secondly, in the next 3 to 5 years, the U.S. will experience a tremendous increase in retirees. It'd be the most increase we've ever seen in the history of the United States. At the present rate of increases of in California of license fees, California will become the most expensive state in the United States to hunt or fish. It will force retirees to go elsewhere to hunt and fish, and leaving the department short of revenues, which will mean you will have to increase the fees again. What I really come to talk to you about are the two things that I presented to you. On the first page, I won't read it to you. I'll kind of hit the highlights because I think it says pretty much what it says there. One of the things that we've had on the Trinity is we've never, but one time in 15 years that I know of, have we met quotas on the Trinity River. And what we're asking is some way to ensure that. The in-river sport fishing was kept to one dalton and two jacks. At the time, it could have been determined that there was an excess of salmon not harvested from the ocean sport fisheries or a larger return than what expected. The DFG could have changed to allow two adults and one jack, which would have taken care of a little bit of that surplus, kept fishermen in the area, and allowed a little more expenditures in the communities along the Trinity and Klamath Rivers. Salmon and steelhead fishing bring in approximately $1.3 million into the Klamath Trinity River communities. Allowing the fishermen to stay another week or two would have increased that money. If the limit had been increased to two adults and one jack with 6 and 7 days, we're speaking of last year now, the river communities could have possibly realized another $300,000. I realize that this is not a lot of money to government agencies, but it would greatly influence the economy of the river communities. Remember, we're a bunch of small communities that live along the rivers and depend on outside dollars to make our revenue. Overall, what I would like to recommend is that there be some way that when there is an observation or determination that there is an excess of salmon, that some way we allow the increase to be captured, and that we could change it from one adult to two adults in 7 days, or maybe keep it at one adult, two jacks for 7 days, but eliminate the 7 day. There's several different ways that I've recommended there. So I respectfully that you at least read this and consider it for your permanent time. Thank you. On the second page is Trinity River Fishing Hatchery. In 2003-2004, as of February 24, 2004, 11,828 coho salmon have returned to the Trinity River hatchery. Over the last 6 years, an average of 2,500 coho have returned to the hatchery. They need 1.2 million eggs to meet their quota of releasing 500,000 yearlings coho salmon. In 2003, in 2002, and 2003, the hatchery had a 4,800-plus coho surplus. What I'm proposing is that we take and provide a means of capturing that surplus. And one of the ways would be providing a hatchery coho season, whereby the people could catch a hatchery coho, like very much similar to like what we did with the steelhead. And as you can see, the steelhead is totally recovered, not totally recovered, but has very well recovered. I recommend, in fact, the group has talked over it very seriously, that we recommend that the allow of a take of a coho would be maybe limited to 3 or 5 per season, similar to what you're just talking about on the wild steelhead. Basically, what happens is that the taxpayers' money pay for the hatchery for these coho, and the greatest majority of that money is done by the government, but it is picked up by the excess is picked up by the license fees. And what we would like to see is that somehow we are able to use that excess salmon. I thank you very much, and I'm here to answer any questions. Thank you very much. I also would like to thank Neil Manji for having the meetings there in Willow Creek so we could better form a conclusion of what we wanted for proposed regulations.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Rudy Ramp, followed by Richard Walter.
Good morning, Commissioners and Mr. Trainer. My name is Rudy Ramp, and I am a property owner in the New River area. I started fishing the New River in 1952 and was obviously greatly disappointed when the river was closed to angling about 6 or 7 years ago. Based on the meetings I attended with department staff over the past 4 months and your request of staff to develop options which would allow limited angling opportunities in the New River, I have high hopes that I will be able to once again fish the New River starting September 15th of this year. The meetings with the department staff helped me and other property owners in the New River area to better understand the reasons for the conservative position taken by staff and resulted in our agreement to reconsider our option 1 in favor of the much more conservative option 3, which staff is offering for your consideration. We hope you will give favorable consideration to their proposal and approve it for adoption at your May meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard Walter, followed by Tom Weslow.
Richard Walter, property owner in the New River area. Like Rudy, I just want to speak in favor of the adoption of option 3 as developed in the meetings with Fish and Game. It's a very conservative option, and I think it would be fine for everybody at this point in time. And I'd like to express my thanks to the commission for pursuing this in response to our citizen input, to Neil Manji and to Cal Trout for their help in this. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Weslow, also point out that the commission has received a letter from Mr. Weslow, which is one of your exhibits for this item.
Thank you, Mr. Trainer and commissioners. The letter basically says it all. I'm more or less here just to say thanks and make my testimony as brief as possible for the benefit of all of us, that we concur with the department on option 3 and appreciate the open and frank discussions. And in the letter, we cited those folks that worked with us, and they did a darn good job to help us come to an agreement so we wouldn't have to have some more arguments in front of you folks. So I just would encourage you to adopt option 3 and say thank you very much. That would conclude my New River testimony. Unfortunately, I didn't know I was going to have to testify on another issue today regarding the steelhead harvest on the Klamath River. And while Caltrout and Fish and Game had some initial discussions that were very preliminary on this issue, we're a little surprised it's moving forward and that it actually is in this cycle and, in fact, delaying the entire process due to noticing requirements. We actually haven't seen any notice on this recommendation and strongly urge that the department and the commission get something out to the public as soon as possible if it is to be considered during this process. I don't think the public is knowledgeable and engaged on this issue, and I would be very leery of moving forward on any recommendation until that has been addressed. Briefly, our concerns would be on this issue that, one, there's a lack of information on adult wild fish in this area, and I think we need to have a little bit better understanding of exactly what population we are talking about harvesting. We also need to illustrate that this would not be a limiting factor in production for the Klamath River. I do think there are some other very severe problems in the Klamath River that need to be addressed, and honestly do not know at this point in time if a harvest of wild steelhead would be detrimental or not. Another issue that needs to be raised is the hatchery at Iron Gate, which is at the upper end of this 7-mile reach, has not met their goals or quotas for production in most years, and that the potential for wild fish contributing to those goals or production could be limited by this proposal. Additionally, the fish kill in 2002 decreased the amount of fish available that year and in these upcoming years because a lot of them were killed. On top of that, the survivors from those fish that made it to Iron Gate Dam were being held in the Fald Creek facility, and when they turned the water off there for a little bit too long one day, most of those fish were killed. So we're concerned about the stock, both hatchery and wild, on the Klamath due to those fish kills, and are, like I said, unsure there is enough fish to allow a harvest there. There's also a timing issue related to the steelhead card. The steelhead card right now would be one of the mechanisms to not only monitor effort and catch and retention in that area, but also for enforcement. And right now, the steelhead card does not have a section that is specific to that 7-mile reach. And in order to get that in place to use as a monitoring enforcement tool, I think next year would be the earliest we could do this. The steelhead card for this year is already printed and sold. Additionally, I think it might be wiser to use what limited resources we have resolving some of the bigger problems facing wild and hatchery steelhead on the Klamath, other than trying to monitor this harvest that will have very limited opportunities, in my opinion, due to the small numbers of wild fish there. So I think it's kind of a question of where do you put your effort into this situation? Do we want to put a lot of effort into trying to monitor a harvest and look at what happens in that 7-mile reach, or do we want to restore other parts of the Klamath River so hopefully we'll have a lot healthier populations? Other than that, I'll withhold our comments until the normal process brings this up later on. Those are just concerns we have. It doesn't mean we're in support or in opposition at this time. It's a little premature for us to develop a position until we have some more discussions on those issues. So thank you very much. And again, to the department, thank you very much for the cooperation on the New River. I think it was a very good process, and we came to a resolution that I hope the commission will find agreeable.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak on the? Yes, sir. Well, on the Klamath Trinity regs as a whole.
Well, this concerns. My name is Wellington Neese. I'm from just a concerned citizens group in Humboldt County. And our problem is that whenever you go to buy a license, for instance, an 04 license, No rules and regulations are in place. Nobody knows what it's going to be. Nobody knows what the limits or regulations are going to be. We were wondering why the commission couldn't consider starting selling licenses from July 1st through June 31st of the next year. And every time you went to buy your fishing license, you could pick up a regulation pamphlet and you'd know what you're doing. And you people would gain a lot of respect from all the fishermen if you consider that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that concludes public comments on this item. We'll move to item number 14, receipt of public testimony on proposed amendments to section 27.80 of Title 14, California Code of Regulations regarding the ocean salmon fishing regulations. The commission at its February 6th meeting in Long Beach authorized its staff to publish notice of its intent to amend section 27.80. The commission will consider adoption of the proposed regulations at its April 22nd, 2004 teleconference meeting. The department's proposals have been provided to the commission, and Mr. Eric Larson of the department's Marine Region will be making the department's presentation on this item.
Mr. Chairman, before we begin, I'd like to ask Sankey a question. The gentleman had raised a question. Is there any way you can address that for him with respect to the licenses and why we don't sell them in July? And
it would require a legislative change.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So there's your answer. We don't have the control or authority to do that. It would require legislative change. So you need to be talking to, you said Humboldt County? Well, what we're telling you is we don't have jurisdiction over that. We can't do that. So you have to.
You don't think that would be a good idea to plant the seed? I mean, you people would gain a lot of respect from the.
Well, I think if you have that idea, then you could talk to Sankey or some of the other department personnel, and they can make that proposal and take it to the legislature. I don't know if you have any. You want to say anything on it?
I mean, we have windows of opportunity on various bills to introduce ideas to solve some of these issues. As is typical, there's always more than one side any coin. And so we're more than interested in the ideas, and I'll give you my card and we can talk about it.
I just wanted to make sure that you didn't think we weren't listening to you. So, all right.
Okay.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm going to be very brief today. We're in the middle of our process right now for the ocean salmon regulation. We just completed this week the Klamath Fishery Management Council meeting where we make recommendations that go up to the Pacific Fishery Management Council, which meets beginning next Tuesday up in Seattle. We'll be taking a process there where we utilize a technical team and assessment of the fishery stocks that we know from last year and what our projections are for next year, and work cooperatively with the commercial industry and the recreational industry to provide a three-option recommendation, which we will come back to the commission and present. That the commission will also hold public meetings on those options for the recreational portion of that, and that meeting is scheduled for the 24th of March in Crescent City and the 25th in Weaverville for In River. At this point, we're just taking public comment on this, and if there's any questions I can help you with, I'll be happy to do so.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak to proposed changes to Section 27.80? Seeing none, we'll move to the next item, item 15. It's the request of North Pacific LLC of Kirtland, Washington for renewal of experimental gear permit X1861 to harvest tanner crabs and other deep water crabs for commercial purposes. Commissioners have a copy of their letter dated January 27, 2004. It was from Russell Moore. Mr. Moore is here to answer any questions that the commission may have. The department has made a recommendation for approval, and looks like Mr. Larson will make that presentation for the department also.
Thank you, Mr. Treanor. The item you have before you is a renewal for an experimental gear permit from Russell Moore and George Walters. It's to take Tanner crab and other deep water crabs. The history of this goes back to 1997 when Mr. Walters made two landings of Tanner crabs in Crescent City. Subsequent to that period of time, they obtained an experimental gear permit and expanded their catch. That was in February of 2003. They obtained a gear permit X1861 to trap Tanner crab and other deep water crabs. They started under that experimental gear permit. They started to take crabs from District 6 and District 7 beginning in April of 2003. There is a requirement they have an observer aboard by NOAA Fisheries Service. They have been complying with that. They've made several landings, and to date they've come back in for a renewal of that permit application. The department is in favor of that. We have added a fee to that, an increase in the cost of $1,000 to help offset some of our costs of analyzing the data. We're in favor of reissuing this this permit to continue to gather data on this fishery. At this point in time, we don't have enough information on it to complete our analysis. The department recommends that the experimental gear permit be renewed for 1 year with the standard conditions that we've applied before, with the addition of a special condition of the $1,000 fee. The department again requests that no more than a total of two experimental gear permits be issued for Tanner crab in California waters, and that's because we don't yet know the impact of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Moore, did you want to make any comments?
Mr. President, Commissioners, my name is Russell Moore. I'm one of the owners of the FV North Pacific with George Walters. George is currently fishing the vessel off the coast of California right now and couldn't be here. I'm the vessel's manager and came for him. We all started deep water fishing for crabs back in the Aleutian chain back prior to 1980. We developed gear and methods to haul it out of deep water for over a period of several years. We felt that there was a viable fishery for deep water crabs off the west coast of the United States, and we came and applied for permits to fish in 1997. We found crabs along the coast but had trouble marketing them at a price that would work. We found that certain style pots fished much better than others. It took several years before we felt the market and prices would warrant doing it again. We had to find a processor with a short plant that processed the crab, and we had to find a broker that felt he could market this stuff, the tannery at a high price. And then we had to go out and buy the gear that did work the best. We fished last year from April through June. And this year we bought an additional $200,000 worth of gear and started in February. We tried to start earlier. It was going to start before the end of, before the first of the year, but we had an extensive amount of work in the shipyard that wasn't expected. Where shafts were bad, we had to replace them and stuff like that. So anyway, we started in February, going to continue fishing here through July. And we bypassed the Opelio fishery in Alaska so that we could start earlier. We're trying to find out when the best time to be fishing the crab are down here. We work well with the Department of Fish and Game, providing them with information. We're dedicated to make this a successful venture, and here to asking the commission to renew the permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Moore?
Move department recommendation.
Second.
All in favor? Oh, sorry.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. It's an old habit, hard to break.
Good luck. Good luck fishing. God.
You have to take him out to the woodshed.
Give me
Next item is consideration of possible adoption of proposed changes to sections 27.60, 67, 82, 28, 29, and 28.55 of Title 14 California Code of Regulations regarding bag limits for rockfishes, cabazon, and greenling, and the fishery closure process. The commission at its December 4th meeting in Sacramento authorized staff to publish notice of its intentions to amend these sections. That public notice has been published, and the commission received public comments at your February meeting in Long Beach. The overwhelming comments from the public was in support of these regulations. I don't have any cards from speakers on these proposals. Ms. Maria Vokovich of the department's Marine Region is here to make the department's presentation on the matter.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. President and commissioners. In December, we came to you with a request to make an in-season change to the 2004 recreational groundfish regulations due to new data coming in for the last quarter of 2003. The council had adopted in September the regulations for 2004, and you adopted them in December. So it was kind of a time issue with data not being available before you had adopted the package as it sat. Currently, we are asking to eliminate the sub-bag limit for the the shallow nearshore species in the 10-fish bag limit. We are also asking for a change to the bag limit in the northern rockfish and lingcod management area. The bag limits are definitely different in that portion of the state from the other two portions of the state, and we are running up against excess catches against OYs. Even in the northern area, we just got recent data that said that we exceeded our black rockfish allowable catch for last season. It would also make it consistent, bag limits consistent throughout the state and easier for the public to understand. We are not proposing any changes to seasons at this point. It's strictly the bag limit. In the northern section, there is an option in the package that allows you to choose whether the bag limits will be exactly the same for boccaccio for the state, or whether the allowance to keep two boccaccio in the northern section is what you would prefer to have. The third portion of the regulation package is concerning the department's closure authority. Currently, we are restricted to closing only rockfish, lingcod, and certain other species. Because these same species are aggregated with other groundfish species, the authority for the department to close the groundfish fishery, in addition to some of the named fisheries in here, would keep an emergency closure process from coming to the commission. The current regulations also only allow us to close the fishery for the entire remainder of the year. This request would be providing for the department to actually reopen a fishery towards the end of the year if the data prove that the OYs had not been taken. So in item number two, the decision that I'm asking for the commission to make is whether the bag limit should be exactly the same for the entire state or whether the northern portion of the state should have an additional boccaccio in the bag limit. Otherwise, the recommendations are as they sit for the other two options. Do you have any questions?
Any questions from the commissioners? Commissioner Hattori?
No, I'm okay right now.
No. Thank you, Mary.
Mr. Chris Dorsett.
President Kellogg, Commissioners, my name is Chris Dorsett with the Ocean Conservancy San Francisco office. I will be brief since a lot of the issues before the commission today on this issue are the same as those that we talked about yesterday with Lingcod. We support the proposed regulations, in particular the ability of the commission to be able to close fisheries when an allowable catch level is exceeded or expected to be exceeded. This is going to be absolutely essential in meeting the targets that we talked about yesterday for not only overfish species, but those species that are not overfished and that we're trying to manage sustainably so that they don't become overfished and cause these problems in the future. In the handout, I included the latest information I had regarding overages last year for many key species off the coast of California. So you can take a look at some of the significant overages and what these proposed regulations are trying to address. My prediction is that the fisheries management system is going to be very dynamic over the next few years and trying to keep fisheries constrained within their limits. And the ability of the department to move quickly to close fisheries when needed is going to be absolutely essential. So we would support these proposed regulations, and I thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you.
That concludes public comment on this item. A motion would be in order.
In that motion, we needed to decide whether to add the additional Picacho to the northern area. Is that what it was, Maria?
Yes.
Yes. Currently, in the Picacho population in the north is separate from the one in the south, and so there's this allowance for retention of Picacho in the north that was greater than in the south. And so the question is, for consistency's sake and for clarity, do we want to make it the same, or do we still allow that extra Picacho to be in the bag limit in the north? The bag limit analysis shows that there are some bags that have two fish in them that we've seen, but it's not a large number of two fish bag limits that are retained by people. So in other words, some people will be impacted, but not to a great extent if we cut that down. It's not a resource issue is the answer.
So we, what's the pleasure of the commission? We could approve the department's recommendations with the inclusion of the additional Picacho for Northern California would be appropriate motion, I think.
Yeah.
One of you.
I'd like to make that motion to approve our recommendations.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's it. So I got it right that time.
Oh. Yeah. We said yes.
Okay. Next item is announcement of future meetings. Our next meeting is April 1st and 2nd in Sacramento. As I pointed out yesterday, we have to change, or staff recommends that we change the meeting date for May, from May 6th to May 4th, in order to participate in the field trip with the Board of Forestry.
And that works for everybody?
That works better for me.
So do we have to make a motion to do that?
No.
No, okay.
We'll just do it.
Public calendar, okay. Just
yeah.
Right. Yep.
Yes, sir, unless you have something.
Oh.
I'm in discussion over here with Sankey on an issue. I just noticed something in the mammal regs with respect to reduction of some tags that I don't want to see be reduced, and there's no biological reason for doing that. So I'm trying to get clarification from him. Maybe I should ask Cunningham on this issue. There's a request to reduce the elk tags in the Tule in the northeastern portion of the state from what it's currently at, 7 to 5. I was actually going to move for an increase to 10 this year. We don't have the environmental document with us, and we're not sure that there's a range in there. So, I mean, this one sort of slipped by me, and I'm just now catching it. I want to make sure that when we go to take it up and vote on these, that I'm not limited. So,
June.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
I mean, obviously, if it says an environmental document, it doesn't have the. We adopt this
April 22nd.
Yep, plenty of time.
Do I have plenty of time?
Yeah, you can bring it up April 2nd.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if it's not in the EIR, or
yeah, you can bring it up at next month's meeting.
Right. I have time.
Yeah, if the range accommodates your request in
then
the
I'm okay. Yeah, I know I'm okay.
You're okay.
The range. I'm just curious as to.
Yeah, at the April meeting, you could ask to change any right. of these numbers in the proposed right. regulations to a different. I mean, because that's what we're coming
well, that's
to
what we
at April.
Do anyway, right. I was just curious as to whether or not there's a range in there, and I don't see it in any of the stuff that we have right here.
No, I need to look that up. I didn't
okay.
bring it with me.
And you can talk to the Carlson and people in between too.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you.
I'll accept a motion to adjourn.
Move
to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned until next meeting.